Hello and welcome back to the One Goal US Soccer Podcast. We'll start the way we always do. George, how are you doing today?
Absolutely doing amazing. Got to watch some Premier League this weekend. Lots of great things happening involving US soccer, so I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, man, me too. I'm doing very well. My Sergino Dest jersey came in the mail. Looks great. I'm very excited. He looks great. Almost had an assist over the weekend. And I'm doing very well myself. So let's start here. The big news of the week is Uli Lehnes got a loan deal. Well, first of all, he signed a new contract with Wolfsburg, and then he got a loan deal with SC Heerenveen in the Eredivisie. So that's a very exciting news. And so why don't we just start here, and you tell me how you feel about that move.
I love the move. I absolutely love it. One thing we always talk about is players getting minutes. And if Uli was at Wolfsburg, he probably wouldn't be getting minutes early on, if ever. So now he gets to go to a team in a top division like the Eredivisie. He's given the number 7 jersey, which means he is going to play. And Heerenveen's 2 starting wingers this past weekend were both young players as well, 18 years old and under. So that means he is going to get opportunities. And that's something that the likes of Richie Ledesma and Alex Mendez, also in the Eredivisie, can't even say. So I'm really excited to see him play week in, week out and get his feet wet in the professional department.
Definitely. I completely agree. I'm very excited for him. I'm also very happy that he got a new contract. You know, he was on almost an amateur deal with Wolfsburg. So it's very good to see him get rewarded for his efforts. And then for Wolfsburg to send him out on loan and say, you know, we still believe in you. We give you the contract and then we're going to send you out to get the playing time. And hopefully he can make it back to Wolfsburg and do well for them next season. I also want to point out that Michael Bradley actually played for the same team Lehnes would now be playing for. So that's kind of a nice, cool U.S. soccer, connection. And I think the Eredivisie has actually become kind of a new hotbed for U.S. soccer. We have Luca Del Torre in there. You mentioned Richie Ledesma. You mentioned Alex Mendez, Sergino Dest as well. And, you know, there's a lot of good young players. And so I'm just excited for him to play in a league that's more wide open. And, you know, he said in his interview that one of my skill sets is one-on-one and tracking back with defenders. So I think he's definitely going to have a chance to, you know, better himself one-on-one in attacking situations. And then I think it will also help him defensively as well. So I'm just very excited for all things Uli Lehnes at this period. And I'm looking forward to just seeing him play. And like you mentioned, that number 7 jersey, that's not a small detail. That's a very big deal. You know, he's an important part of what they're looking to do. And I'm just excited.
I absolutely love this move for him. We talked about it all the time. We want these players to be getting minutes. If he was at Wolfsburg, he probably would have been stuck with their second team. He wasn't really going to be challenging for Bundesliga minutes. But now we see him get to go to a top league like the Eredivisie, first division, and he's going to be getting minutes week in, week out. He was given the number 7 jersey, which means they have a plan for him. They want him to get in games. If you look at their starting wingers the past weekend, they were both teenagers as well, which means he's right in the mix with them. And getting minutes in the Eredivisie is something guys like Richie Ledesma and Alex Mendez aren't going to be guaranteed this season. So it's absolutely huge for Uli, and I'm excited to see him get his feet wet in the professional game. I think another big thing that we saw with this move is just the support he's getting from the U.S. soccer community, and especially the players his age. We've seen guys like Kobe Hernandez put on his story. Congrats. Chris Richards, Chris Gloucester. These young guys are building a community with each other, which is incredible to see. And we always talk about U.S. soccer, whether or not they do have that community, whether or not these players who are in the pool communicate with each other outside national team camps. And with these young players, we're seeing that they are comfortable with each other, they are integrated with each other, and they are a family. So it's really going to be exciting to see how it all comes together.
Yeah, definitely. I think that U20 group is really something special. And, you know, they've seen or they've shown so far to be a very close-knit group. I've heard things on other podcasts talking about how Richie Ledesma has a group chat with his boys. And it's like there's a very close-knit community. I know those guys, some of them are dual nationals, could play for Mexico. And so, you know, it's good to see that, you know, we are trying to foster a community on the ground level and not just at the national team level. So I guess another news thing we could touch on here is Gio Reyna. You know, he had a goal or an assist, depending on how you want to define it. We'll give him the goal. But, you know, he played very well. He started for Borussia Dortmund and their DFB Pokal match. And he looked really, really good. You know, he played in that number 10 role. And I think one thing I saw from him was he's very good kicking those small little passes and just moved the possession on very well. And I think he was more comfortable positionally. And he looks to be a key player for them going forward. So just give me your initial thoughts on what you saw from Gio Reyna.
I think with Gio Reyna, we've seen over the past couple months, it's kind of become normal for us to see him play for the Dortmund first team. But when you really think about it, this is a 17-year-old kid from the USA who came to Dortmund and within a year, give or take, and being in the system, he was playing with the first team, which is absolutely incredible, absolutely unprecedented, really. Yes, we did see it with Christian Pulisic, but it's not something that we should expect to happen every single year or every couple years. And so it's incredible to see what he's doing. He was given the start. He'll probably will get more starts in the week coming. But I think the thing which U.S. soccer fans should be most excited for is that where most people see Giorena fitting into the first team right now for U.S. soccer is in that number 10 role. Yet he had been playing mostly on the wing last season for Dortmund. So seeing him play at the number 10 for Dortmund, seeing him get minutes there, we should be excited that he's going to get comfortable in that position. So when the time does come for the U.S., he'll be very comfortable playing in there in the key games for us.
Yeah, 100%. And just to add to that, you know, when we talked about our expectations, I think it was two podcasts ago, we said, you know, we're not exactly sure if Giorena is the future of the number 10 position. And I'm not 100% certain that he is for sure. But, you know, like you said, it's very good to see him comfortable in this position. So it's not going to be a Christian Pulisic situation where you're kind of forcing a square peg into a round hole saying we need this creative presence. But, you know, he can handle it for the time being. And if Richard Ledesma comes and moves Reyna to the wing, then that's something we can look forward to. But right now, I'm comfortable saying he's our 10 right now. And I'm just really looking forward to October and November. There's a lot of good stuff coming in for U.S. soccer now. I just can't hold in my excitement. I guess another thing we can talk about also is in terms of just newsworthy stuff. Zach Steffen looks to be getting his first start in the Carabao Cup in the next coming weekend for Manchester City. And I saw an interesting quote where it said, you know, he's someone they expect to not just be the backup, but to push Ederson. And I'm not saying Zach Steffen right now is going to be the Manchester City number one, but I'm just very encouraged about his progress. And I like the idea of having our keeper playing a possession-based system like Pep Guardiola requires. And that kind of is very similar to what Greg Berhalter requires. So I'm very encouraged for his development. I know a lot of people had worries about his playing time, but I like the idea of having a guy who's training with the first team, working on his footwork, and still getting an opportunity when he can. So what are your thoughts on Zach Steffen? Are you encouraged by his development as well?
I think having Zach Steffen at Man City, I'm fine with it for now. Obviously, with U.S. soccer, there are some people who don't like our starting goalkeeper being the number two at his club. But if it's going to make Zach Steffen better, I am fine with that. Yes, there might be some concerns that if he doesn't play a professional game from now until our first World Cup qualifier, that is a little bit concerning, but he's going to be getting those reps in training. He's going to become better with his feet. He's going to become better organizing his defense, just being in training with world-class players. There's a difference between, you know, an MLS guy and Columbus Crew shooting at you every day than Sergio Aguero shooting at you every day. So yes, it might be concerning if he's not necessarily has that match experience. But if he can handle Aguero shots, De Bruyne shots, Bernardo Silva shots in training, I'm not scared to throw him in when we're playing Costa Rica because I know he's seen scarier stuff. So I am excited for Zach Steffen. I hope he does put his best foot forward. And whatever happens, I'm excited to see.
Yeah, definitely. No, I'm really looking forward to the season for Zach Steffen. I'm interested to see how much playing time he ends up getting. And again, you know, he's playing for a great team. So worst case scenario, he's at Manchester City. You know, that's pretty good. I also want to touch on a couple other newsworthy tidbits. A lesser known U.S. soccer prospect I feel like we should just bring to the forefront to talk about for people is Johnny Cardoso, who's playing for Internacional in the Brazilian Serie A. And I think he's just someone we should remember. He started his first three games in a row, actually, and was on the bench this last weekend. I didn't come off the bench, unfortunately, but he's been a really key player for them, and he's been sitting in between the two center backs. It's kind of a deep-lying center defensive mid, a la Tyler Adams, who did the same thing with Leipzig this weekend against Nuremberg. And so I think Cardoso is someone we should just, you know, everyone remember the name, think about him possibly coming in November. He was one of those names who was rumored to be a part of the March camp, and I think he's definitely someone we should definitely monitor for the future.
Yeah, I think with Johnny, it's one of those things where we don't really know much about him. It almost kind of came out of nowhere, like, boom, this guy's eligible for USA. Boom, this guy's in the U23 camp. And suddenly it was, whoa, like, where did this all come from? So I think it is exciting if he's somebody who we're able to bring in and integrate, because same way with Gio Reyna playing first team minutes for Dortmund, it's not necessarily normal that we have an American player who's playing first team minutes in Brazil. Brazilian Serie A is a league that not many Americans are familiar with, but it is a very high level. And for an 18-year-old to be starting for the team that is currently the best in the division right now, that's something we definitely need to keep an eye on.
I also want to give a quick shout out to Greg Berhalter. You know, everyone gives him knocks for not recruiting the dual nationals. You know, he's MLS guys only. But from what I can tell, he was one of the guys to spearhead that effort and did a great job of identifying the talent. I don't know how the whole process went, but I have to give credit where credit's due. So I'm encouraged by the effort. And there's another dual national that, again, I'm not saying he's going to play for the U.S. right now, but he's someone I would love to have on the U.S. team. And honestly, I'd probably call him up in March if we could. But Yunus Musa, he was born in New York City. He's also grew up in Italy, eligible for Ghana, and he's actually the captain of the England youth national teams. And this weekend, he was the first English player to play for Valencia's first team, and he made his debut for them. So I'm not saying, again, he's going to play for us tomorrow. Maybe he'll never play for us. And anytime there's a guy who's American eligible, I think we should just watch. So he's someone just to keep an eye on for the season.
Yeah, I think with him and Flarenbaugh, and I put them both in the same category of in the next couple years, probably not. We're not going to see them in the U.S. colors. We did see Flarenbaugh play the U18s a little bit, but he seemed to kind of cool off his interest with the U.S. And I don't think either of those guys are really going to see them unless their career really does stall out in the coming years, which obviously we don't want to see. We don't want to wish ill will on anyone's career. But if those guys' careers keep on the trend they are, they're going to stick with England, especially England also has so many up and coming young guys. But if at any point they do want to come to the U.S., we'll take them with open arms and we'll give them that first team call up. And I don't think England would do that.
So, you know, we'll see. I'm just keeping my eyes open, just watching all the guys, and we'll see what happens. But I got to bring up another topic. You know, we're going to bring in another One Goal U.S. Soccer writer. So what we're going to do here is we're going to have a little kind of roundtable discussion. One thing we've been talking about is this idea of Jordan Morris. You know, how do we evaluate Jordan Morris? How do we evaluate the MLS guys? And, you know, what does the role of MLS in relation to the national team? Is it one of those things where, oh, they're playing in the MLS, are they automatically disqualified? Or, you know, how do we evaluate that kind of thing? So we're going to bring in Jake here. And Jake actually had some pretty hot tweets about Jordan Morris. So we'll bring him in, break those down, and kind of see where he's at. Without further ado, we're going to welcome on Jake, and we'll see where this one goes. So Jake, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself to the viewers?
Yeah, so my name's Jake. I am a writer for One Goal. I've been following the USMNT for pretty much my whole life. I played college soccer for a year. I was a walk-on at UCSB, and yeah, now I'm just writing for One Goal, playing Sunday League.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm happy to have you on the podcast. The main reason why we brought you on is you had this very hot tweet about Jordan Morris a couple days ago. So if you have the tweet ready, would you do me a favor and kind of break down what the tweet was, and then if you want to kind of clear the air, and then we'll go into discussion about MLS as a whole.
Yeah, okay. So what it was is Matt Doyle tweeted out a video clip during the Seattle Sounders San Jose game. Nico Ladero got subbed out, and as he was subbing out, he took off the captain's armband and he was handing it to Jordan Morris. And Jordan Morris like took the armband and he like shook his head and he handed it off to someone else. So I quote tweeted that video clip and said, "This is why so many USMNT fans want to see Jordan Morris phased out of the USMNT player pool." And people went crazy. That was my first interaction with Seattle Sounders fans. They did not like that. I do want to be like clear, like that tweet, I wasn't expressing my own opinion. I was just saying that it's moments like that, you know, like turning down the armband that fuels the fire for all those anti-Jordan Morris fans out there, you know? Because I just feel like people don't understand like that they're not like mutually exclusive. You can be a good player, but we can still expect more from you. It's like,
right. It's like, okay. Like, and you know, also with Jordan Morris, like for me, when I saw your tweet, I was like, I don't really care if he takes the captain armband. Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm like, okay, he's one of our best players. Like, he's not going to be the captain of the national team. If he doesn't want or doesn't think of himself as a leader, that's fine, because we're just trying to call on the best players. Yeah. So that's one thing. But at the same time, it's like, all right, like if you want to go and show you're the best, you have to go somewhere outside of the MLS because it's not the best.
The guy just seems so complacent.
He really does.
He's performing and he's doing his job, but it's like, dude, like when you look at him athletically, he's so talented. He could be so much better than he is. He's just so like content, and like it's crazy. And it's the amazing thing is how much he's been able to achieve by being so content with what he's got.
Definitely. Like, dude,
he break his leg and came back and was just chilling, just as fast, just as strong, became an even better finisher.
He learned how to use his left foot. It's crazy.
Yeah.
No, he's gotten better, but it's like, okay, great, you've gotten better, but like, don't just be very good. Like, you could be like great, honestly. Like, if he went to Germany, bro, he would be nasty. I think he would have already moved on from Werder Bremen. He would have been like playing, bro. Because I look at like Jack Harrison, and I think they're kind of similar players in terms of like their path. Like Jack Harrison made the leap, and I'm like, okay, bro, like you saw what happened to him. Like he banged one against Liverpool, and I'm not saying Jordan Morris could do that, but it's like, well, why can't he try?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I remember when he was still in college and he got the call up to the U.S. team. He's honestly, he's more or less the same guy he was when he was in college. And it's like, that should be a sign that, like, you're not getting challenged enough to grow.
Right, definitely. So, for the record, are you saying that you're not an anti-Jordan Morris fan?
No. Jordan Morris is a necessary evil right now. He's right. Not the guy that's going to get us to where we want to be, but he's a decent enough stopgap. He's a good player. I like Jordan Morris. And, yeah, he belongs on the USMNT right now.
Awesome. All right, Jordan, if you're listening, you know, we're fans of yours. So Jake's also a fan, so just to clear the air. But I want to open it up to a kind of a discussion about MLS as a whole. You know, one thing I've been looking at is kind of how the youth numbers have shifted. So like in 2018, first of all, shout out to Jamie Hill for all this info here. But in 2018, the number for pros, under 20 pros on pro contracts was 47. And now in 2020, it's about 104, and that includes MLS, USL, and USL1. So, you know, the overall youth numbers in the MLS have completely went up. And I know there's a big discussion about, you know, how do we evaluate the MLS? How do we evaluate USMNT talent in relation to the MLS? So I guess I'll ask Jake first and then George. What are your just overall thoughts on the MLS, where it is now, where it's going, and kind of tie that into the national team, if you will?
Yeah, so I think we're making progress. When we're making tangible progress, it's not as fast as a lot of people may like, but it's steady and consistent progress. And as we produce more and more homegrown professionals, we're just increasing our chances of creating the next Christian Pulisic, right? We're taking more swings of the bat, and eventually we're going to hit a home run. So I think the more professionals we produce, the better.
George, do you have any thoughts on it as well?
Yeah. So as an MLS, as the US, we can't expect to be at the level of the European countries that consistently produce players in their domestic leagues. We don't have a league like the Premier League. We don't have a league like the Bundesliga. So I decided to take a look at the best country outside Europe and kind of see what they're doing. So I looked at Brazil, and I looked at their roster from the 2019 Copa America that they won. And the average age at which their players left Brazil to play for the first time was 18.78. And of those players, 9 of them were teenagers when they left, and only 2 were above the age of 21. Alisson, who left to go to Roma when he was 24, and Everton, who just left now to go to Benfica, also at age 24. And out of every single player on their roster, the only player who never made an appearance in the Brazilian league was Ederson. So I would say that's kind of the model we should sort of look at, whereas these players get a dip of the toe in their own domestic league, and then we ship them off, because clearly it's working for Brazil. They won the Copa America. They're a historical powerhouse. So we kind of have to look at this model. So I think that's where someone like Jordan Morris comes in, where people get mad because he's about to be 26 years old and he's just lollygagging the MLS. He, you know, does well, scores a couple goals, and we're kind of looking at him like, come on, like, you know, take it up a notch. So that's why I think it is difficult. Maybe if we have one Jordan Morris, it's not too bad. But if we want to be successful, yes, we all want to have the best league in the world, no doubt. But we have to look at that model where we want our players to be successful, and we have to ship them out somewhat early when we can.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I think the trouble people have is when you talk about the national team, and, you know, Greg Berhalter is an MLS guy in his own right. Bruce Arena is an MLS guy. And then we had Jurgen Klinsmann, who was kind of the anti all of them, who said, you know, forget about the MLS. The MLS is trash. And, you know, maybe he's right to some degree, but I think that's also kind of productive because, like you said, you kind of want to use the domestic league as this, you know, foundational point for, you know, even at the USL level with a Jose Gallegos who can, you know, sign a pro deal and then work his way either into the MLS and then to Europe, or from USL directly to Europe. So, you know, that idea of a pathway league, I think, is really what we should be aiming for. But I think it's really tough because you talk about kind of the commercialization of MLS, and, you know, you think about, we bring in these Zlatan Ibrahimovic, we bring in the David Beckham, and there's kind of this juxtaposition of, we want to increase viewership and interest in soccer, but at the same time, we want a better U.S. soccer. And I think as fans, we kind of conflate the two and think it's one and the same. But I think it's really tough to say, we also need to improve our domestic products that would also improve the overall game. Because if you have better, you know, a better foundational ground of players, you can have the guys like Zlatan come back like they do in Brazil with Felipe Luis coming back and playing for Sao Paulo. And these guys who, you know, are part of the league, but at the same time, like, the young players are pushing to be better. And I guess my question off of that is, you know, there's guys like Jossie Zardes, who is probably not good enough to, you know, to play outside of the MLS. He had a couple offers at some point to play in the championship. And people look at him like, oh, dude, Jussi Zardes is trash. Like, how can we have him on the national team? But, you know, he's doing well in our domestic league. And you look at our national team picture, and I don't really see another guy where I'm like, all right, that guy right now could displace Jussi Zardes. So I think it's kind of unfair to, you know, say MLS is trash, but at the same time, like, we don't have an entire slew of better players. So until we get to a point where we're 100% set outside of the MLS, like, you can just discount it entirely. Like, this could be our minor leagues in a sense, but we still have to value it as an important part of our future. So I'm just curious, you guys, like, what do you do with the Jussi Zardes? It's like, okay, maybe Jordan Morris is kind of an anomaly, but the other guys in between, like a Sebastian Legette, who's, you know, he's good, but is he Premier League good? No. But is he almost national team good? Maybe. You know, like, how do we evaluate that?
So, I mean, first and foremost, I think a lot of people use Jussi Zardes as justification to fuel their anger for, like, Greg Berhalter. And I think that's misplaced, because Zardes represents the effects of the lost generation. You know, the guys, the age cohort that we weren't able to develop from the 90s to the 90s to 95s. We just didn't produce any elite players at that time. And as a result, we have to settle for players like Jussi Zardes, who are raw and unpolished. You know, but to answer your question, I don't think we're going to need to rely on those MLS guys for much longer. If you look at what's happening in Europe, it's coming. We just need to be patient and wait for that lost generation to phase out completely.
I think for me, once again, I want to compare ourselves to the countries who we kind of want to emulate, and that would be Brazil and Argentina, the countries outside of Europe who are going to say, yes, we can admit we don't have a top league, so we need our players to go elsewhere. So I go back to that Brazil 2019 Copa America squad. Only three players played in the domestic league for Brazil. And of those three, two of them previously played in Europe, and one of them has since moved to Europe. And then you look at Argentina, it's very similar, where it was four players currently playing in Argentina, three of which had experience in Europe. So if we look at this, we don't necessarily, if we are going to be successful, we shouldn't have guys, let's say, in the 24 to 27 age range who have been playing in MLS their whole career. That is not what we want. Maybe if a guy, you look at Sebastian Legette, I'm fine with Sebastian Legette in this sense, because he went to Europe, it didn't really work out, and he's come back and he just recently made his 100th MLS start. So something like that, that means it's in the right direction. So right now, we're not at the level as a country, as a soccer nation, to be not having those guys like Jordan Morris, like Jussi Zardes, like Aaron Long right now, who have been domestic for their whole lives and are in that, you know, 25, 26, 27 age range. But that's where we need to get. So right now, if people have a problem with those players, unfortunately, guys, we're just not there yet. And that's fine. And credit to those guys being the national team now, because we always talk about it, but we have so many of these young players breathing down those guys' necks. We have Chris Richards, who's played six professional minutes, breathing down his neck. We have Kobe Hernandez Foster, Brian Keo, guys like that who just went to Germany. So these guys are coming up and the tide is changing. But for now, we just have to be patient.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Something I also want to bring up that makes kind of the move from MLS to Europe kind of challenging is just, again, the juxtaposition that I mentioned before of, like, we want to grow the league, but at the same time, like, a lot of the MLS mentality, I think it starts with Don Garber especially, is like, no, our players are valuable here. And, you know, we saw with the Reggie Cannon move to Boa Vista, everyone's like, oh, it was done 2 weeks ago, but yet it didn't happen for whatever reason, you know. And with Aaron Long, oh, he's going to West Ham. He had the offer, New York Red Bulls turned it down. So it's like, okay, we want our players to succeed, but it's also, you know, MLS, we have to kind of put the onus on them to say, okay, guys, you know, you guys are not just going to be the Premier League. That's irresponsible. And that's just, it's not realistic at the end of the day. And it's tough to say, like, okay, with Brandon Aaronson, you know, he's been rumored to go to Red Bull Salzburg and we want him to make that move, but it's up to the Philadelphia Union and him to make that move happen. I think something that we have to preach to MLS is, like, the best interest of the players is ultimately the best interest of the league. Because if you have a league like a Brazil where you see these guys are just being exported, almost 20 guys a year who just move to different teams throughout Europe and then they become superstars. You know, I'm not saying that's going to be us, but the Brazilian teams don't stand in the way of their players. You know, they understand their product. They understand that okay, we sell this player out here. That's more money we can reinvest into our teams. So I think that's a really important thing. And I think getting a work permit as an American is another more challenging thing. And I think for Jordan Moore specifically, something we should also mention is his father is like the head medical person for the Seattle Sounders. And Jordan Morris is a diabetic, so I can't know for sure if that's the reason why he stayed or not. But, you know, there are unique circumstances across the board, and we'd love for him to go. But it's just frustrating because I'm like, MLS, come on, but they're not willing to come on. So I just don't know what to do with that.
It drives me crazy when MLS clubs will receive an offer for a player and it's not high enough, like the Aaron Long situation, Gianluca Lucio. These teams from Europe come in with a concrete offer, and the MLS clubs are unwilling to sell for that amount. And to me, it seems like these MLS clubs just aren't confident enough in their academies, and that they think like, oh, we've got a gem right here in Gianluca Busio. Who knows when we're going to produce another one of him? So we really need to get our money's worth. But what I urge these MLS clubs to do is like have faith in your academies. Like, you're going to produce 5 more Gianluca Busios within the next 10 years. So go ahead, sell Gianluca Busio now for $3 million. That way, the next Gianluca Busio you sell, you can sell for $5 million. But we're putting like the cart before the horse, and we're thinking that these players can command these large transfer fees when they can't yet. We haven't earned it at the national, at the international level. But if we're just willing to kind of take a hit right now and maybe not maximize profit right now, it'll help us in the long run. And I just think MLS clubs are being really short-sighted in their approach to transfers.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I think when you talk about like kind of selling ourselves short, I think it's not even that much. I think we can sell them for a $3 million, a $5 million. And whatever the valuation is, like, you have to, again, think about the best interest of the player. You know, I think about an Eric Palmer Brown who had the opportunity to play for Porto, and then Juventus was there. And then now look at him now. You know, he went to Manchester City, didn't have the work permit, and now he's sent on loan, and he's never going to play for Manchester City. You know, so it's one of those things where it's like, guys, I understand you want the guys to play for a Manchester City. You want them to play for Real Madrid. But in terms of our success at the national team level, like, we have Pulisic, we have Reyna, and it looks really great now. But that's really it. Like you mentioned before, the lost generation. Like, we don't have a sustained success. And sure, it looks good now. We've had a couple exports, but we have to keep doing it. And the way you keep doing it is more success, like, breeds success. I know that's a really stupid thing, but it's like, okay, you sell them for three. That's a $1.5 million for each player you can put back into the system. You know what I mean? So maybe you don't get 2 Gianluca Busios, but another team comes back and offers you $2 million for a player that's worse than him, and you've already made money on that. You know what I mean? So like you said, playing the long game. And I'm curious, George, you know, like, with your experience with the DA, I know you don't have like MLS experience, but in terms of like what MLS is kind of shaping, like, do you have any insight you can provide on how that kind of works?
I would say, just in terms of MLS, the league has grown so much. And my fear, I don't know if other people have the same sentiment. I'm not sure if, you know, people are not going to agree with me, but I think because MLS is growing, and yes, we are growing, sometimes maybe I think these clubs are overestimate what the growth actually is. Like, yes, MLS is a league great players are coming to now in the primes of their careers. But at the end of the day, if we want to be successful, we have to kind of take everything with a grain of salt and realize where we are at. And you talk about, you know, letting clubs, you know, sell their players, believing their youth academy, saying, I will let this guy know because I know in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, we will have a guy come in just like that. And once again, I think of Brazil. Yes, the numbers are much greater, but I think about Santos. Santos had Neymar. They sell Neymar. A couple years later, they get Rodrigo. Sell Rodrigo. You look at Flamengo. They have Vinicius Jr. Sell Vinicius Jr. Now they just sold Heinier, who's to Real Madrid. So these clubs are literally just recycling players after players, and MLS needs to get used to doing that at a smaller scale. And I think a part of that, the problem with that, comes from compensation and how we still really haven't found a way to do that. I remember Justin Rennick's, you know, got in some trouble with New England Revolution because he wanted to go train in Germany. And I think the problem with that comes from, if he ends up, you know, going on trial and signs over there, they probably won't have gone compensated for it. And you think about, you know, how that worked with Weston McKennie. So I think there's so many things MLS needs to figure out in that realm. But I think at the end of the day, they need to realize what they're doing, everything they do needs to be for the benefit of American soccer. Yes, you are a club. Yes, everybody wants you guys to succeed. But at the end of the day, you need to realize what league you are in. And there's still a way to breed success while also breeding talent for the country.
When we talk about selling to other clubs, like, these relationships are very important, you know, because you think about how it could benefit MLS. You know, there are like the partnerships with different clubs. They could send players on loan back to the MLS, and that would improve our domestic game as well. So I think the idea of like being bigger than a team in France or a team in Germany is just ludicrous, because it's like, okay, I get it, you have a good player, but you sell this player for $4 million. Maybe he's worth $6 million, but the club says, you know, we really appreciate this. You know, you obviously you took a discount and this player worked out very well for us. We have this player who, you know, could come on loan for you guys and think it'd be an interesting prospect for you guys. And then it would raise the game of both teams and it would increase the relationships. And that's just one way you kind of build soccer from within, because you see, like you mentioned, Brazil, like these pipelines, there's kind of main teams like Benfica and these teams like that who just are the natural progression. And I'm not saying we're going to have teams like that who all the Americans go to, but just building these pipelines so it's not a jagged road of where am I going to end up in Europe? How do I do it? But it's these clubs want your best interests. And if you acknowledge the fact that we're not going to be a Bundesliga level league, you know, we're not going to be a top tier league. We're going to be good. That's fine. But we have to help the product grow. And the product is not soccer, but it's the players who play soccer, which is very easily conflated as one thing. But again, it's the players first.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. That's a really good way to look at it. We're not right now, the MLS isn't selling the product. It's selling the people producing the product. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think MLS is one of those leagues that it seems like they always have to be on the same page. It's a very American model of, you even look at like how it's everything's Adidas and things like that. And it's, you know, everyone has to be on the same page. It's this whole thing about equity in the MLS. And I don't know if that's part of the problem too, but I think just the sooner the league gets more organic, I think that might be like the final piece, because MLS has gotten so much better. I don't want to act like we're just shitting on them right now.
Definitely,
but the league has gotten so much better. We're getting an influx of talent. You look at guys like Miguel Almiron coming in, coming out. Even someone like Christian Pavon, a player who was in his prime, was just removed from playing the World Cup for Argentina. Everybody was saying he was the next big thing. He would have never come to MLS 10 years ago. So credit to the MLS. The sooner we become more fluid, and yes, they want to have this equity. You have, you know, the allocation order and stuff like that, you know, to keep things, you know, even. But the sooner the league becomes more fluid in whatever way possible, the better things will be in the long run.
Yeah, no, you make a really good point. You know, we have to give credit. MLS is definitely much better, even 5 years ago, to where they are now. Like, the changes are nuts. You know, you look at Atlanta United, like, they were selling out more tickets than the Falcons football team. Like, that's amazing. And Inter Miami to pull off, you know, Blaise Matuidi and possibly Higuain, and David Beckham is the face. Like, obviously the results aren't there, but the names are encouraging, and it's no longer like, okay, this is just a retirement league with random Americans kicking the ball and running. Like, there's some actual soccer being played. So like you said, we have to give credit where credit's due, but it's just annoying, man. It's just like, okay, we see it. You guys both see it. We all see it, but can we get to that final product? You know, can we allow it to be more organic, again, for the best interest of the players and for the clubs at the end of the day also, because I understand, like, they're trying to make profit and they're trying to fill seats. So you want to get the big names, because people don't really know a Brandon Aaronson unless you grew up in that area, you know, so it's tough to kind of figure that out. But at the same time, it's like, okay, those guys are equally as important to the growth of MLS as Zlatan Ibrahimovic is at the end of the day, in my opinion.
It's interesting. When MLS first started, I feel like the biggest thing holding the league back were the players and the coaches, right? We didn't have very good players and we didn't have very good coaches. And what was keeping the league afloat was good management at the top level, like the C-suite guys. They were able to keep the league afloat when it probably shouldn't have been able to stay afloat. But now it's the tide has shifted, and it's like the part of MLS doing the good job are the players and the coaches, and they're putting on a great product on the field and they're doing really good. And it's the front offices letting the league down right now with their unwillingness to sell and just like their stupid rules and their salary caps and their unwillingness to spend. And it's just crazy how it's shifted.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I think it's something we can probably wrap up on, is this idea of like the shifting of MLS. And just like, I think it's very easy for us, you know, as kind of sitting down in armchair analysts looking at this and saying, okay, obviously, it's very simple, but it's much more complex than that. And obviously, we can't solve it in one day and even in one conversation. But I think just like looking at where we were and where we are now is kind of a good, okay, we've made progress and we can't stop here and say we're done. So I think it's kind of tough to have all the answers, and we don't. But I'm glad, Jake, you joined us for this conversation. And I'll give you the opportunity here to plug any articles you have that are coming out for One Goal.
Yeah, so this week we have the Bundesliga preview coming out. It should be really exciting. Yeah, we're going to just recap all the young American players to watch in the Bundesliga this season. And then probably next week, I'm going to have an interview with Holstein Kiel's Nico Carrera. He's a U17 center back, really promising guy, really promising player, and an even better guy. I think you guys are really going to like it.
Awesome, man. We're looking forward to that. George, any final remarks?
I mean, we want to see our guys succeed. Simple as that. We want to see our young players succeed. We want to see our players in their primes succeed. We want to see our vets succeed. So whatever way is going to be best possible in MLS, in Europe, wherever, whatever is going to bring home the World Cup in 2026, that's what we want to see. And that's all I can really say.
Yeah, man. At the end of the day, if it's MLS, that's fine. But whatever the best team is, wherever that is, if they're playing on Mars, bro, if they're doing well on Mars, I'll call them in. I don't care. That's kind of where I'm at. But again, I want to thank Jake for his time and George, you as well. But that'll wrap up this edition of the One Goal US Soccer podcast. Of course, please rate, review, and subscribe. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back this time next week.